Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 64, titled Buddha Lens as Taught in Vimalakirti Sutra.
I do want to say about studying the Vimalakirti Sutra, my root teacher, before I became the student of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, my root teacher was a Mongolian Lama called Geshe Dangyele Tsenemete Geshe Ngawang Wangyal. And when I finished translating it in 1976 and published it, I gave him a copy, although he didn't he could speak English very well, but he didn't really read English translations. He read in Tibetan. But anyway, I said, for your library, Geshe Lama. He said, here's a copy of this book I translated. And he said to me, oh, you're beginning to study that sutra. And then I said, well, no, I translated it. He said, yes, you're beginning to study it. I said, no, I've been working on it for a year. He said, yes, you're beginning to study it. And he was quite right, because over the years I have returned to the reading that sutra with students many, many times, and it really is a very profound and marvelous sutra. It was not too popular in Tibet, because it's most famous for Vimalakirti criticizing in a respectful way, but rather strongly criticizing most of the patron saints of the Theravada Buddhism, you know, Shariputra, Moggallana, Upali, Mahakasyapa, all of them. He finds them too dualistic in their outlook. And he even challenges Maitreya, Bodhisattva, and everyone. And so each one of the many people Buddha asks, please go ask how Vimalakirti is doing and cheer him up. This is, he's a Buddhist, he's in our community, you should go. It begins with Buddha doing that. And then they all say, oh, no, thanks. Oh, I love Vimalakirti, but I don't feel like it today. I don't want to go now. And then Buddha says, well, why not? And then they tell a story about the last time they saw Vimalakirti, and he totally blew them away with the criticism of their view. And then they said, and I learned a lot. I was silent after that. I couldn't say anything. Vimalakirti was so correct, what he said. But I just don't feel like seeing him again today. Just in case, you know, that I do something wrong, you know. And he's irritating everybody, in other words. But then when Manjushri says, okay, I'll go see it. Sure, no problem. I can't argue with him. You know, Manjushri is the wisdom bodhisattva, you know. But he says, I don't mind, I'll go talk to him. And the minute he says that, they all say, oh, can we go with Manjushri Buddha? So then they all go to meet Vimalakirti, and then the main action of the sutra. But actually, in a way, it's encapsulated within the opening chapter where the Shakyamuni Buddha is presiding, and he performs an amazing miracle. And then the last few chapters, the Shakyamuni is again there, because Vimalakirti and everybody go over to visit him at the end. And then in between, all kinds of things happen with Vimalakirti. So anyway, I'm going to skip a lot of things until I get to the beginning of Vimalakirti. I'm not going to discuss there. Okay, this is now on the Vimalakirti. I hope you can read. I'm not sure you can easily read. But this is from the first chapter. So now, oh yes, in Tibet, as I said, it was not well known because Tibet was very monastic oriented and the laymen were humble and so on. But in China, Korea, and Japan, and in India originally, no doubt, the Vimalakirti Sutra was extremely famous. And many kings and emperors and people wrote commentaries, and they loved it because here was a layman who was equal in a way to the great monks, you know. And at least but although he respected them, he said he bowed to them, he followed the Buddhist manners and etiquette. But philosophically, he was definitely after them. And then the one place you find it in Tibetan literature is Jangya Rowe Dorje, who was famous lama of 18th century, who was a teacher of the Manchu Emperor, Qianlong Emperor, and he was a Mongolian. Hello, hi. Oh, good. Oh, you can sit here also. And thank you. And he's considered the reincarnation of Vimalakirti. And this Jiangzi Hutuktu, he is. So there's a Tokju of him in the biography of Jiangzi Rowe Dorji, written by his disciple. And so he's known as that. And then Nyingma tradition, he's considered one of the early Siddhas in some of their traditions. Vimalakirti is a little bit well known in the Nyingma tradition. Otherwise, not very well known in Tibet. And and then at the end, Vimalakirti is revealed in the sutra to be from the universe Abhirati. You know, there's a famous Western Buddha land called Sukhavati, where Amitabha rules, you know, Amitaya is Amitabha. And everybody wants to go there. But there's a less well-known one called Abhirati, which is in the east, also very far away, and from our perspective. And the Buddha Akshobhya is the Buddha of that universe. And so Vimalakirti is revealed that he comes from that universe. And even Vimalakirti reaches across the universes and picks that one up and brings it in miniature shape and shows it to everybody in the assembly. There's a lot of miracles in the sutra. And then everybody goes, oh, wow, there's Buddha Akshobhya. And the people, some of the people in that universe are frightened. Oh, someone is taking us away. He says, don't worry, that's just Vimalakirti. He's not going to harm you. So Vimalakirti is like an emanation of Abhirati. Abhirati is known in Tibetan tradition as a place where the Siddha, the Drup-top Siddhas like to go. In the biography of Milarepa, when Rechungpa talks to Milarepa about doing his autobiography, he meets Milarepa in Abhirati, where Milarepa is living after having passed from Tibet. He went to Abhirati. So the yogis seem to like Abhirati more than Sukhavati. Now, in the beginning, the Vimalakirti, in this chapter, this shows a blessed Buddha surrounded and venerated by the multitudes of many hundreds of thousands of beings, sat upon a majestic lion throne and began to teach the Dharma. Dominating all the multitudes, just as Sumeru, the king of mountains, looms high over the oceans, the blessed Buddha shone, radiated, and glittered as he sat upon his magnificent throne. Now, there's a backstory to the next paragraph where the young bodhisattvas from Vaishali, which is the big city in Bihar, where Buddha is dwelling at this time, and where Vimalakirti lives is a famous layperson in that city, important elder. And that is that when Buddha was coming toward that city, he had a tradition that the first person who invited him to stay with his monks in their garden or grove or mansion or wherever they wanted to stay, he would accept. You know, he didn't have any discrimination between his invitation. And there was a famous courtesan of that city named Amrapali, like a movie star in those days, something like that. And then there was the mayor of the city and some important bigwigs. And they had a race, a chariot race, to get the first to ask Buddha. And she had better horses than the mayor. So she reached the Buddha first and said, please come with all your monks and bodhisattvas and stay in my garden. So Buddha doesn't speak, but he goes, he nods like that. So the elder people of the city were offended, and their egos were miffed. So they were boycotting visiting the Buddha. They weren't going to visit him. They say, oh, he wants to stay with the movie star. We're not going to go see him. But then all the young people came. They wanted to go see. So they went to see him in the Amrapalivana, in the garden of Amrapali. And then when they came, they brought these jeweled parasols, and they offered them in a big pile of jeweled parasols, a very wealthy city. You know, India was such a rich place in ancient time, in front of the Buddha, and then they sat down. And then Buddha did this miracle right at the beginning, which is very important in the Vimalakirti. As soon as these precious parasols had been laid down, suddenly, by the miraculous power of the Blessed Lord, they were transformed into a single precious canopy so great that it formed a covering for this entire billion-world galaxy. The surface of the entire billion-world galaxy was reflected in the interior of the great precious canopy, where the total content of the galaxy could be seen. Limitless mansions of sun, moon, stellar bodies, the realms of the gods, dragons, etc. All the oceans, rivers, bays, And the voices of the Buddha of Ten Directions could be heard proclaiming their teachings of the Dharma in all the worlds, the sounds reverberating in the space beneath the great precious canopy. In other words, he created a miraculous vision. When I recounted this as translator, I was very surprised, what could this be? And then I finally realized it is a planetarium. Something like he created a magical planetarium so they could see the interconnectedness of all nature in the vision that they had. And then they actually asked him some beautiful questions, all these young Lichavi youths from this great capital city in India at that time. And they asked a question about, they said, Lord Buddha, we all know about traveling the path to attain enlightenment, and we want to do that. All of these young 500 people do. But the one thing we don't understand is, how do you build and adorn and make beautiful a Buddha land? You know, the Buddha Kshetra. Actually, nowadays, in those days, I translated Buddha land. Nowadays, I translate Buddha verse, like a universe, but actually a Buddha verse. So a universe as seen by an enlightened being, a Buddha verse. How do you do that? That we don't understand. And so this is the difference between what you could call dualistic Buddhism, you know, Theravada, Mahasanghika, the 18 different sects of the monastic Buddhism. I don't like the word Hinayana, so I don't use. I say individual vehicle Buddhism, which is dualistic in outlook, in that it argues that nirvana is somewhere else, and this is just a samsara here, you know, so in that sense, dualistic. And the big question, the additional in the Mahayana is, how do you change the whole world? You know, I can see becoming enlightened myself, maybe slowly after many lifetimes, they are saying, but how do you change the whole world with you? Like a bodhisattva is supposed to take everybody into enlightenment. How can you do that? It's so huge, you know. How does that work? So then Buddha gives a long speech in this first chapter about how the bodhisattva's Buddhaverse, when they make it, it's something perfect and fantastic, and there's no suffering, there's no stinginess, there's no evil, there's no anger, there's no lack of concentration, there's no ignorance. You know, perfect place, he says. And then he ends this long speech by saying, therefore, as long as the bodhisattva's mind is purified, the universe of beings is purified, and so everything is just perfect, you know. So then Shariputra, naturally, I think I have in the next slide, maybe, I hope that. You know, this is the end of the speech, yes. Mm-hmm. Where the Buddha says, you see, the purity of his Buddhaverse reflects the purity of sentient beings. Purity of sentient beings reflects the purity of his intuition. Purity of his intuition reflects the purity of his teaching. Purity of his teaching reflects the purity of his transcendental practice. And purity of his transcendental practice reflects the purity of his own mind. So then Shariputra actually is a little bit stimulated telepathically by the Buddha. Poor Shariputra always gets in trouble in Mahayana Sutras. Constantly in trouble. Although unfair, because Buddha actually is influencing him to think, you see. Magically influenced by the Buddha, Venerable Shariputra had this thought. If the Buddhaverse is pure only to the extent that the mind of the Bodhisattva is pure, then when Shakyamuni Buddha was engaged in the career of the Bodhisattva, his mind must have been impure. Otherwise, how could this Buddhaverse appear to be so impure? So he has this thought, but he doesn't speak it because it would be terribly rude. He's there, he's the Buddha's great disciple, but that's what he thinks. So then the Buddha says, wait a minute, Shariputra, what do you think? Is it because the sun and moon have faults, are impure, that those blind from birth cannot see them? And then Shariputra says, oh no, the fault lies with those blind from birth, not with the sun and moon. And the Buddha declared in the same way, Shariputra, the fact that some sentient beings do not behold the splendid display of virtues of the Buddhaverse of the Tathagata is due to their own ignorance. It's not the fault of the Tathagata. Shariputra, the Buddhaverse of the Tathagata is pure, but you do not see it. And then Brahma is there, you know, that's God, right? So then God says, yeah, I see it as pure, Shariputra. You're like, you have a problem. And then Shariputra doesn't agree. And he, what's that?
Pointed.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and then Shariputra, oh, I see. He doesn't, he says, you see, you know, God says it's very, very pure. So no problem. So then Shariputra, oh no, I didn't have the rest of that quote. Oh, my fault. Okay, I have to tell you. So then Shariputra doesn't agree with that. But then Buddha stands up and he takes his foot and he goes like this. Puts his big toe on the ground. I don't know whether right or left leg, he doesn't say. And then suddenly everyone present sees the whole world as perfect, like a Buddha land, like Sukhavati. And they see themselves like made of jewels, and they see their seat as jewels, and that everything is like a jewel plasma, like fantastic, perfect place. And there's no problem whatsoever, no evil, no suffering, nothing. Everything's perfect. And they are in the exact place they need to be for their own karma, for their own karmic evolution, to be as close as possible to Buddhahood. And they're all shocked. And Shariputra is shocked. And then after a few minutes, then Buddha says, how do you like the Buddha land now? The Buddhaverse now, Shariputra. He says, oh, it's fantastic. I never imagined. And then Buddha picks up his toe, and then it turns back to the way people usually see it, which is full of faults, right? A lot of pollution, too much traffic. So that's the first chapter, which is really, really important in the sense that it poses the problem, which is the Mahayana problem. If Shakyamuni Buddha was a bodhisattva, and the bodhisattva does not attain nirvana, freedom from suffering, until everyone has attained freedom from suffering, then how come Shakyamuni attained Buddhahood? And here we are. We are imperfect in an imperfect world, we think. But on the other hand, what we think may not be correct, because after all, we're dominated by ignorance. So then there's a paradox in here. There's some kind of question which is then posed by the sutra and by the entire Mahayana, actually. It poses this question. The world seems so awful, and yet it is Shakyamuni's perfected Buddha land. So how can that be reconciled? And the whole sutra goes on like that. And then there's a later chapter where, just to keep on this theme for a moment, the answer, in other words, that the Vimalakirti Sutra gives, where Shariputra, in a later chapter, he's worrying because he's in Vimalakirti's house. And Vimalakirti's house is a very strange house because thousands of people go from Buddha and they're all inside one house. And it's somehow infinitely big inside. It's just a house in the city of Vaishali, a big mansion, but still, there's thousands of people in there. So however many people go in, there's always room for them. It's a kind of magic house. I don't know if you know Doctor Who, if any of you know Doctor Who. The Doctor Who TARDIS is like that. It's infinite inside, and outside it looks like a little police box. So it's very magical, a lot of things in the Mahayana, actually. The physics of Mahayana Buddhism, I call it the physics of shunyata and relativity, allows for supernormal, I don't say supernatural, I say supernormal things to happen, actually. And I'm, of course, very frustrated that I can't do them myself. But anyway, point is that how does this happen? So then, at one point, Shariputra's worrying later on, I think, in the ninth chapter or eighth chapter, and he's saying, there's a lot of monks here who can only eat up to noon, and some of them are elder, like me. And if we don't get food, we get hungry until the next morning because we're monks, in the Sangha, can't eat at night. So he's thinking that. So Vimalakirti says, typical, Vimalakirti also reads his mind, says, Shariputra, did you come here for lunch or for the discussion about the Dharma? So then he teases Shariputra as usual. And Sarkutra says, no, I don't care about lunch and the Dharma. But then anyway, Vimalakirti decides he has to offer food to the whole assembly. So he creates a duplicate bodhisattva, golden bodhisattva, from his own body. And then he sends that bodhisattva to the, I think, eastern direction, beyond as many universes as there are grains of sand in 62 Ganges riverbeds. Quite a distance. With the speed of thought, to a universe made of incense, pure perfume universe. And he says, this is Sarvaganda Suganda, is the name of the universe. And the name of the Buddha in that universe is Suganda Kuta, mountain of beautiful incense, beautiful scent. And he says, ask that Suganda Kuta for a little bit of his leftover from his meal and bring that back here. So then he sends that bodhisattva out across the galaxy in the speed of thought, he's instantaneously in that other universe. And he asked the Buddha there, Vimalakirti sent me from Shakyamuni Buddha's universe to Buddhaverse to get a little leftover for you, since he wants to feed people, if you would kindly give that. So then that Buddha, that incense Buddha says, oh sure, here, it gives him a few grains of rice. And then he's leaving. But then the Bodhisattva's there. You know, that Buddha has a retinue of many thousands of Bodhisattvas who are also made of incense. Their bodies are incense. The land is incense. They sit under incense trees. The Buddha there doesn't teach with words. He doesn't give lectures. All he does is radiates incense or perfume. And when they sniff the perfume, they go into samadhi. It's a really high-functioning Buddhaverse. And so, but of course, because of that, they're very developed, but they're also very bored. Just sniffing there in samadhi, you know. And so they say, what kind of person must this Vimalakirti be who sends out a bodhisattva for takeout across the galaxy and then takes the food back across the galaxies? What kind of person? Oh, Buddha, can we go visit that world? It's called the world, Shakyamuni's world is called the world of Saha, which means to be tolerated, tolerable. Meaning barely tolerable, is the name of this universe, from Buddha's point of view, Buddha land. It's the Saha universe. So that Buddha, Sugandhakuta says, sure, you guys can go. You have supernormal powers. You can go across the galaxy with mind power. But one thing I have to tell you, when you get there to the planet Earth, to the Saha world, you have to change your body and make them more coarse. Because if those human beings on that planet of Shakyamuni Buddha took one smell of you guys, they would go crazy. They'd go nuts because they're not used to such beautiful things. They're frightened of that. It will frighten them. So you have to change your body. So then those bodhisattvas come down, and then they do that, what he told them. And they come to Vimalakirti's house. They also all fit into the house. And then when they get here, they go, ooh, pinyu. What kind of world is this? Shakyamuni Buddha must have no plumbing, no infrastructure. Horrible. How can they live here, these people? What kind of Buddha land is this? They totally freak out. And then Vimalakirti talks to them, and then Vimalakirti says to them, well, how does your Buddha teach in your universe? And he said, well, they explained, well, he just makes a perfume. He radiates perfume, and then we smell that, and then we enter samadhi, and we develop our wisdom, and it's all very easy. And then they say to Vimalakirti, well, how does Shakyamuni Buddha teach here? And he says, oh, he begins by saying, well, that's hell down there. That's the Pretaloka over there. That's the animal kingdom over there. This is the human realm filled with suffering and birth, death, old age, you know, etc. And goes on, and they go, oh, that's so scary. Why does he teach like that? And then Vimalakirti says, well, you guys have it easy up there, and you can develop your meditation and your samadhi and your prajna, your wisdom. But you know what you can't do up there? You can't develop your compassion because you're so far away from suffering. There's no hell in your universe. It's all just incense. And so this one, although it looks so bad, the human beings here can evolve toward Buddhahood so much faster than you can. It's the best possible way to keep a Buddha land. So in a way, that is the sort of argument of the sutra, that Shakyamuni's Buddha land, this Buddha land right here, is the best possible place that we could possibly be. Even if we think it's horrible. That's just more of our ignorance. That's part of our lesson. We have to learn about that. It's a very, very strong argument it makes, and he makes it in many other ways, but that's sort of the essence of it.